Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And before this, I was a student, like many of you. And my favorite part of school, if I had to, favorite thing that I learned was the standardized test. I thought a lot of my teachers in school, I know we're supposed to love teachers and really praise them and they should get paid more and all that, hurrah, hurrah, hurrah. I actually believe that a lot of my teachers were bozos. I didn't enjoy it anyway, and probably because I was a bit of a jerk. But what I loved was learning, and I loved it with standardized tests. They tell you exactly what topic you want to learn. You get to dive in. I would get those books. Usually in school, I wouldn't care, but I would get all those prep books, and I would go through the assignments in them, and I would study, and I would try to raise my grades. And I really loved learning from those tests, all the way up to the SATs. I really enjoyed it. In my car on the way to school, I would listen to SAT word recordings. I loved it. The problem is those books are such a pain in the butt to carry around. And I hate to sound like somebody who would care about this stuff, but you look a little bit lame carrying a bunch of standardized test prep books because, I want to keep an image up. Today's guest had a similar view of the world. He said, why are all these books why are we lugging them around? And they're so antiquated. There's a better way. There's technology. It's been invented. Come on, get with it. And he created a company. And I, apparently I'm still a jerk. At first, when I heard about this company, I said, great idea, but not ready for a Mixergy interview. I wish I was in school to study it, but it's not really a successful, big enough company for a Mixergy interview. And then I found out how well they're doing. And it took them, I'll be honest with you guys, it took them a few pivots. Not like they just landed on this, but they're doing phenomenally well. And so I invited the founder on here to talk about how he came up with this idea, how he built it up, how they figured out that the first incarnation of this business was not going to work out, and how they figured out what to pivot into, and how they're getting major, major companies and organizations to work with them. So that's what we've got here in this interview. His name is Ujjwal Gupta. He is the founder of Bench Prep. They are a comprehensive learner success platform. So a lot of the software that the ACT and organizations like that use, actually, he is the guy responsible for creating it, and they're white labeling it and using it for their students. All right. Finally, I should say before I give him a chance to talk, this interview is sponsored by two phenomenal companies that I vetted, that I work with, that I'm happy to introduce you guys to. The first will host your website right. It's called HostGator. And the second will help you hire your next phenomenal developer. It's called TopTal. Ujjwal, it's good to have you on here.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrew. And I'm very surprised that the best part of the learning was standardized test, because a lot of people we know are so scared of going through that arduous process of actually preparing and passing those exams.
And you know what? There was nothing I could lose, because I always thought that I was going to be an entrepreneur anyway, so who cares what my grade point average was. I loved learning and I love points, and so this combines two of my passions. Throw French fries in and I'm in heaven.
Yeah, and what we have done is actually make it less stressful for those users who are not like you, who are scared of like sitting for those 3 hours and actually their lives depending, or their professional lives depending upon one exam. So what we have been able to do is actually work with the official bodies. And one of the biggest reasons that they work with us is to reduce the stress level of the candidates preparing for those exams, because like they are there for a mission. Almost every organization we work with has a mission to help students or learners be ready for either their colleges or careers. And that's what we enable them to do.
Your revenue, 2017, what was it?
We are a private company, but we are cash flow positive, profitable, growing, doubling in revenue
every
year.
Can you ballpark it for people?
It's between $5 to $10 million. It was between $5 to $10 million last year.
Last year, 2017, and it's increased since then.
It's gonna double, if not more, this year.
Okay. Before we started, you gave me a clearer understanding of it, and I told you in this interview I was gonna ask you questions that you didn't want to answer. Like, I know you're not enthused to give out your revenue, but I also told you could always say no, and I'm glad that we got to a place where you feel comfortable sharing a little bit of it. All right. The accent. I also told you that I would bring this up because one of my frustrations is that I know that people are going to tune out if they hear an accent that they're not familiar with. But I also know that because of that, I'm going to be one of the few people championing your story, and people are going to love Mixergy because I find guests like you, whether you're not going to be on NPR every other week. Where's the accent from?
India. I grew up in India. I did my undergrad from India. I came to US to do a PhD in chemistry/nanotechnology. I published 16 plus papers doing my PhD. But yeah, I'm originally from India. I've been in US for 14 plus years now.
You ever have anyone in the US say go back home?
You know, I would love to say yes to it. But I feel I'm one of the very few lucky ones who hasn't seen the other side yet.
You know what? I wonder also if it's you. You guys are in Chicago. I grew up in New York. I remember when we used to go to Long Island, not the Persian part of Long Island, but the other part. People would say to my dad, go home, because he had a bit of an accent. Siri doesn't understand him. I understand him. Siri doesn't understand him because of that. Your dad was what back in India? What was his work?
So he started out as an engineer. He did civil engineering. After finishing up civil engineering, he tried to do a bunch of things. He didn't like it, or he was feeling constrained, so he got into a law program. He became a lawyer. He did that for a few years. He wanted to continuously learn, and the only way to make money in India is to have a job. So he tried to mix jobs with learning, and finally, he realized that that's not, like, any job is not going to make him happy. So he started his own company.
And what was his company?
He became a real estate developer. So he built it. He started. So he tried manufacturing scissors and clothes. And then he also became a real estate, like, development company.
I'm smiling because his son basically went through a similar path. You love learning. You wanted to get a job. You found that the jobs that you were looking at weren't going to challenge you. And you finally decided, I got to start my own company. Am I right?
Yes, twice. So actually, I did that right after my undergrad. I started a company because I went to, if not the number one, the top three engineering institute in India, because that's what you're supposed to do. Like, growing up, the only two professions were engineering or being a doctor. So I decided engineering, went to the number one IIT Bombay in Mumbai for my undergrad. While finishing up, I realized that, like, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. Seeing my dad's journey, I started a company with my advisor in nanotechnology. He wanted to keep it extremely small. I wanted to make it big. Our wavelengths didn't match. So I said, why not I become an expert and then start my own company? So I applied for PhD programs, got into one, did my PhD. I would say one of the best things, I did really well in my PhD compared to average PhD by publishing 16 papers, winning outstanding research achievement awards. I even got a few big name job offers. But while I was finishing it, I realized that most of the research that I have done is not commercially viable for the next 20 years. It was sub nanoparticles that we were creating and studying. So I said, I want to do something which can make an impact right now, and hence PitchBook.
And so the two of you and the guy who became your business partner, what's his name?
Ashish Rangnekar.
The two of you would get together and say, let's try just throwing around ideas and see. And you wanted an argument. You wanted him to be devil's advocate to your idea and you to his. Was there one idea that you felt strongly about that he shot down that you're glad that he did?
Oh, there were tons of them.
Is there one that stands out? That I want to get a sense of how you were thinking to arrive at this idea.
So we would do weekly calls where one of us had to come up with an idea and the other had to play devil's advocate. And this was right around the time that iPhone just came up with the App Store, and everyone was building these, like, 99-cent applications, which you press a button and there will be a new fart song. And actually, we wanted to do something similar initially. Like, let's just start making these random apps to make money.
Is there an example of one of the random ads that you were thinking of?
Random apps. So we I think one of the apps that we came up which didn't make sense, or we said like that's not a big business, was top 10. So we said, let's just make these lists of top 10 restaurants, top 10 beers, top 10 universities. And
so the app would list the top 10 of all those different things.
Yes. And that was like, we were also just brainstorming and coming up with things that we would want to use. And I, like, both of us agreed that it would be a useful app. And I'm talking about 2008, 9 time frame, when iPhone was the only operating system which had an app store. And on your mobile, like we both had iPhones from day one, and both of us knew that this is going to be big. So we had to do something on the iPhone. That was like a pre-constraint that we had posed, so that we are not just going in extremely random directions.
Okay. And it makes sense that whenever there's a new platform that's going to be big, there are opportunities that won't be there later on when it's stagnant or when it's mature. And so you guys were just tossing these ideas around. And he at the time, from what I understand, had a GMAT book. He was prepping for the test or what?
Yeah. So he actually went to Chicago, University of Chicago Business School, Booth Business School. But the idea came before that. So he was in New York. He used to work for Capital One, and he used to commute in subway, and he used to carry that heavy GMAT prep book with every day, which was static, which would not store any of your data, which would not show you any strengths and weaknesses or give you scores or analysis. And
it also wasn't like the size of a paperback. It's bigger than a paperback book and thick.
Yes, it was easily, I would say, 2 to 3 pounds that he had to carry with him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when we realized, like, let's just make a GMAT test prep app for iPhone. Both of us are educated enough that we can write 200 assessment or questions for that app.
Uh-huh.
I hired a friend, an undergrad from Penn State, who worked with me on my PhD to build our first iPhone app. As payment, we bought him a MacBook to learn iOS app development.
Uh-huh.
And that was his, like, our way, like, our payment to him to build our first app.
Wait, who was this who did this for you, for just a MacBook?
An undergrad that I worked with during my PhD.
So just a student that you happen to know. And I guess I should say to anyone who doesn't know, GMAT is the test that you need to go into graduate school. So, right, I think I've got it. If you want your master's program.
Yeah, so if you want to do a business school, an MBA.
An MBA.
Yeah, you have to take GMAT.
Okay. So for the price of a MacBook, you got a developer to build the first version of this, and you guys sat down and wrote the questions for it.
Yes.
You wrote it from scratch? You didn't take past test? No, you're not allowed to take past test questions because it's copyrighted, right?
Yeah. So we made sure. So I come from a very research-oriented background where plagiarism is a big thing. So we knew that we don't want to do something which is not good. But given that I have taken 5 standardized tests in my life before that, and Ashish had prepared for GMAT, we knew what, and he actually went to the number, he got admitted into the number one business school. So, and his score was like among 99%. So both of us are very educated. So writing those 200 units was not a problem. But we also realized that that cannot be something that we can continue doing for the business, because we don't want to reinvent the wheel. There are thousands and thousands of instructors, tutors, authors who have written content. So the first app, we wrote the first 200 questions, but after that, we started licensing content from publishers.
Okay. And the first version, it let people take the test questions, and then it gave them the result. And did it also tell them what their strengths and weaknesses were?
Yes. So it would give them a score analysis of what different topics you were doing well in and what topics you need to improve upon. But to be very candid, if I look at that app today, I will probably feel extremely embarrassed.
Yeah, you know what? My producer wrote a note about that, that you told him that you told her that that's the way you felt. What do you think you'd be embarrassed by?
No, it's like if you look at 1990s websites, do you want to like actually look at them?
You know what? Even early 2000s websites, little things drive me crazy. Like the text is always left justified on the left side of my big MacBook screen. They never say in the about the company, they always act bigger. They never say, here's a photo of the guy who founded. Here's what we're about, in a very substantive, concrete way. But I can't tell more specifically what it is about the first version of your app that you weren't excited about. I'm looking at early screenshots of it. You know, it's an iPhone app. So
it was phenomenal for the time. But if you compare with what has evolved off of BenchPrep, it was extremely bare bones.
So was the company called BenchPrep even from the beginning?
No. So our legal name is Watermelon Express.
And so what was the domain back then?
WatermelonExpress.com.
And people would go to the App Store and see Watermelon Express? That was...
Yes.
Got it.
So we are still legally Watermelon Express Inc. doing business as BenchPrep.
How did you get Watermelon Express?
So, you know, we decided that we want it to be an iPhone app business. And when we decided that, we were drinking vodka out of a watermelon.
I've never had that. Okay. And so, got it. Watermelon Express. That became the company. And now I understand also why, when I look back at older versions of the software, it actually looks really good. It's because I haven't been looking at Watermelon Express. And now I'm kind of going back in time and hunting down what that looked like. All right. So two of you have this idea for a first version. You decide you're not going to sell it for this 99 cent price point, which is what you initially were thinking. You finally found something that was substantive, right? And so you said, I'm going to charge more. How much?
$9.99.
How'd you come up with that? That's pretty gutsy back then.
We said, it was very easy to change prices. So we just had the price, uploaded the app, and we never even checked, or we did not even check the app store for a week or two. And we decided, let's go and check like what has happened. And we had already made more than $2,000 in less than 7 days.
Why didn't you check for so long?
Because at that time, we were of the opinion that Apple takes easily a week or more to review and approve apps. So remember, this is extremely, like almost 10 years ago, extremely early days of App Store, where Apple was spending exorbitant amount of time
before they had it right. And so you're saying you didn't know that it was live. It wasn't that you were on to other projects. You just had no idea it was live. And when you did, it was up already for a few days. And so, boom, it was a hit. How did you celebrate that first win?
That's a good question. I think I called my parents. I called Ashish. And we, like, both of us, like, that was our first aha moment. Like, we realized, like, oh my God, this is something which is not just like Ashish or I thinking that it's useful, but this is something that is useful for way more people than us.
And this was just you and Ashish at the time.
Yeah.
So a two-man operation and a guy with a laptop who learned how to code it up. One product. It seems like you quickly, if I'm going back through Internet Archive, I can see you fairly quickly moved into GRE, SAT, and LSAT.
So in the next 2 years, we created more than 80.
80?
Yes.
Wait, how many tests are there? There's the SAT. I feel like the four that I just read right there are the list of them. There's what else? Sorry?
There are thousands and thousands of exams.
My favorite was the Regents in New York. That's not a nationwide thing.
Yeah, but that's high school level. But exams, and when it's not just the college admissions or graduate admission exams, you need a certification for almost everything you do in US. So if you are a real estate agent, you need to have a license. If you are a nurse, you need to have a license. You need to have those continuing education credits. If you are in finance, you need to have a FINRA Series 6, Series 7 license. So we were creating apps for each one of those exams.
And you're imagining what you did was you went to the bookstore or the virtual bookstore. You looked for what books were there. You probably listed them in order of sales, and that's what you decided to get into. And then you licensed the questions from them.
From the publishers, yes.
From the publishers.
Yeah.
On a per-sale basis?
Yes. So we were paying them royalty based on this revenue we were getting. But there's a funny story. So GMAT is taken by about 100,000 users every year. And we were making about $200 to $300 a day. When we said, let's make another app for SAT or ACT, that is taken by 2 million plus students every year. We thought if we are making $200, $300 a day for 100,000 people exam, we should be making easily $2,000, $3,000, or maybe even $5,000 a day
right.
Those exams. And so the day we launched it, we waited for a week. Then we waited for a month. And then we waited for 3 months. And that never happened.
And so we feel like we've got now a product that works, not to the level that you imagined, but one that works, that people are buying, that sales are good. And still there was an issue that forced you guys to change. And I want to know how you changed. Let me take a moment first to talk about my sponsor. And then I'm going to come back in and we'll get into this. My sponsor is a company called HostGator. If you guys are out there, let me see. There it is. Apparently, WordPress now is being used by 30% of all websites. WordPress. So, including Mixergy. So, if you have an idea for a website, now it's super easy to get it up and running. The question then is, all right, WordPress is free. You can get it downloaded anywhere. You can install it and have it managed by anyone. Where do you go to have it hosted? Well, there are tons of options for hosting your website. So, why would you go to my sponsor, which is HostGator? And I'm going to tell you guys why. It's inexpensive, they've been around forever, and it just works. So I noticed you guys, I shouldn't be talking about a competitor in this ad. You guys use Wix to run your first website, right?
Yes.
Right? Hey, you don't need brilliant website development anymore. You used Wix. I'm suggesting WordPress. That's what Mixergy is built on. I'm saying, look, go get it hosted by a company that's been around, that they're not going to be a fly-by-night operation where they suddenly shut down and your whole website's gone. I've interviewed people like that. Don't pay exceptional, exorbitant amounts of money to have your website hosted, because your money should be spent on your product and your sales and not on the website hosting. Just get it good enough to work. So if you're out there and you want an idea, whether you have something new or something that you've already launched, you want it hosted right, go to hostgator.com/mixergy. When you go there, I'll be honest with you guys, they're giving you a discount, but they give discounts everywhere. It might be a bigger discount than you're going to get anywhere. I think it is, but still, price is so small as it is that if I give you a big discount on something small, it's still small. So what you're going to be doing by going to that URL is doing me a solid and letting them know that you came from Mixergy, which means that you're going to be helping to support Mixergy. But you're also going to mean that you're going to be tagged in their system as a Mixergy listener. And you know, I've got a big mouth. So if anyone for some reason needs help with one of my sponsors, I jump in there and I help out. So if you're a customer, came through me, I want to make sure that you have a great positive experience. And every day I get emails from people about their positive experiences and some about their negatives, and I get riled up about both. So here's a URL where you're going to get up to 60% off their already low prices. You're going to get unmetered disk space, unmetered bandwidth, unlimited email address. This is just table stakes at this point. It's good hosting that works, and 45-day money-back guarantee in case you don't love it. Here's a URL. Go to hostgator.com/mixergy. Hostgator.com/mixergy. If you have any doubt about it, go back and see how many of my past guests ran hosting companies that then were crushed by HostGator as these guys just kept getting bigger and bigger. Great company, hostgator.com/mixergy. All right. Where were we? We were talking about, so you had all this software. Why didn't you say, you know what? Actually, what did you say next? Because I have all these, if I'm sitting in your shoes, I have all these other ideas for what to do. You found the right one. I'm curious about how you found that. Was this a crisis for you when you said we did all these courses, it's not working out?
So we would get emails and phone calls from students every day saying that they improved their scores or they passed their exams because of BenchWeb. So we knew that the product was extremely useful for the learners. But the lifetime value for the customers or the end users was like less than $100. And there's not a lot of cross-sell, upsell opportunities in test prep, certification prep, licensing prep market. So because of the low LTV, having to go out and look for new revenue every month, there was just not the right product market fit. However, the product was extremely, extremely solid.
How do you know the product was solid? I mean, everyone thinks that what they do is solid. I think I did a great interview today, but someone else is going to tell me you talk too much. How did you know for sure that this was good?
I think data speaks for itself in our case. We have thousands and thousands of testimonials from students from our old days who used to email us saying that they passed their exams or they improved their scores because of BenchPrep. They don't know what they would do without BenchPrep.
Okay, so you're seeing it and you're starting to feel proud of the results. I saw you guys got some press write-ups at the time. All right, and so you said, it's not us. We just hit a capacity with this. We can't get somebody who's signing up for an SAT course to also sign up for an LSAT just so we can double our sales. It's just not possible. They're not going to college and then law school right away. All right, so then what are some of the ideas you kicked around before you found the right one?
So from pivoting side, there was only one that we could try, which we did, and we have been very successful with that pivot. Which was to use the same product because we knew the product was working and to work with official testing and certification bodies who own that exam to help them reach their candidates and learners and help them improve their scores. And if, yes, so that's what we did.
It was just that. You said, look, and you already had partnerships with them for content. You were licensing their content. So you said, why don't we just create the app for them and they're going to have bigger reach than us and they're going to have an ongoing need to buy from us?
Exactly. So if you look at the professional or these college admissions, graduate admissions market, all these organizations have 100% market share. So if you want to go to a business school, or they are kind of monopolies or duopolies. So if you want to be a nurse, you have to have a license. If you want to be a financial advisor, you need to have a license. So most of these organizations had captive audience, had brand exposure, and expert content. We had the best technology platform.
Weren't you thinking, yeah, but you know what? They could go and hire developers and recreate our software, and they don't need us.
So it's funny you call this out because a lot of companies think like that. What they don't realize is building software is not trivial. It's not easy. It takes time. It takes money. We have spent more than $15 million in the last 8 years to build what we have. If an organization wants to spend that much money over 6 years to build something like what we have, sure. But by the time they build it, we will be 6 years ahead.
Okay. And I'm looking actually to see who publishes their books. I don't know who publishes their books. I'm still doing research in real time. But my sense is that it's not them publishing their own books. They go to publishing companies. And even though publishing a book is easy, they work with someone who does that professionally. All right. Did you have any fear of that? Were you afraid that they were... Oh, there it is. GMAT official guidebook is actually published by Wiley, which is their publishing company. But did you have at the time any fear, hey, you know what, we're about to give them this big idea, they're going to take it away?
No.
No.
I'm a firm believer that ideas is not what makes you, what differentiates you. It's the execution.
Okay. And so you said, look, I know we're going to be able to create it, but what about this? This is where, you know what? This is the kind of devil's advocate stuff that was useful before. Obviously, we know you were right, but good enough would work in that space. If it's good enough because they have access to the customers, that's fine. They're just competing with the book. They're not necessarily competing with you. They have access to all the people anyway, but that's not the way it turned out.
Yes. And one of the biggest reasons was, or two of the biggest reasons was omnichannel. We were mobile first from day one. Most of the organizations which they were trying to build those solutions were learning management systems. And as I was calling out, learning management systems are not built for delivery of learning. They are built for file sharing and grade books and student management and communication between instructors.
Yeah, you and I talked about this before we started. Those learning management systems were assuming that there was a human being teaching and that the software was backing up the human being. They weren't there to replace the human being with an app or replace the book with an app. And that was your revelation. And so you said, I'm going to put this out there. I'm going to bring it out to them and take the risk that they're going to partner up with us. And how did you know how to price it for them?
It was for the first few clients, we said, let's do revenue share so that the incentives are aligned. If you make money, we make money. And that worked phenomenally well for us.
Okay. Anyways, so you build it, you customize it, you create it for them, they promote it to their people, and then you guys do revenue share on the whole thing.
So very similar to how publishers work. Publishers charge upfront fee and then they share revenue on per sale book. And that's how we did it.
Okay. Or they offer an upfront advance based on upcoming revenue. You guys did it the other way. You ask them for an upfront cash and then you use that to build your software?
So we already had the software in place because of our previous incarnation of the consumer side.
I see.
So we just modified that software to be able to have their branding on top of it.
But they didn't have to pay upfront, did they?
In some cases, no. But in some cases, yes. But upfront is a very small portion of our revenue. We actually have 3 to 5 to 7 year contracts. And it's the ongoing subscription that...
And that solves the problem. Now you're selling on an ongoing basis. You've broadened out your audience to now include a much bigger share of the overall test taker market. You've added to your credibility and you don't have to worry about marketing, which I've looked in the past. You guys were good at getting, who was it on your team who got press? Was that you?
Both. So both Ashish and I are very, we have very solid educational background and our product has always spoken a lot on our behalf. So,
but you got press. I think you guys were in the Wall Street Journal at one point. You got some tech press, like VentureBeat, I think.
Yeah. So we have been in New York Times. We have been in Washington Post. We have been in TechCrunch, like all of those back in the day.
And that was you doing it.
Me and Ashish. Ashish is the CEO. Yes.
Yeah. You and Ashish contacting people, getting in. I've even seen small blogs. I don't know what JYOTHI is, but that's a blog. I guess. And I saw that they did a write up about you guys. It's you guys who are doing it. And the post here that I'm seeing in an old blog post is about how bench press is for students. And if I want, I can go and get my own like app directly from you guys and for publishers. It seems like at one point you guys had your foot in each camp, right?
So we transitioned. It took us a couple of years to transition from our consumer side business to purely B2B. We are purely B2B today, but back in the day, we were also... because we were ahead of the curve and we were the first one to a lot of things, publishers used to love us and we were actually making them money. And they really wanted to use our platform as well. So we tried a bunch of things with them as well.
How much did you make in revenue before you made this shift?
So I would tell you that we are easily gonna make 4 times than our peak revenue back in our previous incarnation.
4 times now?
Yes. 4 times this year than our peak revenue in our consumer side business.
Okay. So this was clearly a good move. What I'm curious is, I think a lot of people would have just said, this is going well. Let's just look for other businesses to get into on top of this, or let's just milk this. Why were you guys not at that place where you thought this was fine?
We could have converted into a lifestyle slow growth business, but that's not what Ashish and I signed up for. Like, we want it to be reaching to millions and millions of learners. I personally believe that education can solve world problems. Like, I think terrorism comes from poverty. Poverty comes from not being educated or make a living. Education can solve all of that. And technology is the best enabler to solve those problems. So money has always been part of the equation for us, but accessibility and providing capabilities to other companies at this point, or as many users across the globe, is a huge part of our mission.
All right. You guys did some paid ads. How did that work out for you? I don't want to just quickly transition to that without underlining your point. I've noticed that the bigger mission seems to win. The person who has the bigger vision and not just, I want to make I want to make money with an idea that works, they tend to win. Like, you had on your website this chat app that some people used to have back then. It was called Snap Engage. I really liked Snap Engage. I had it on my site too. It shows that you guys wanted real feedback from people who are on your website so you can respond to them. I love Snap Engage, but they were beaten by Intercom because Intercom had a bigger mission. Now you see them on everyone's website, those little bubbles that let you chat with the owners and their support team. Their vision is, why is it that all websites are, I don't know that I could express Owen's idea better than he could, but it's like you walk into a coffee shop, you get to talk to the owner. If you have a problem, you're just there. Imagine if you walk into a coffee shop and you're just trying to figure out things by yourself. It's confusing. And we've been to coffee shops for thousands or hundreds of years. Why shouldn't the web be like that? And he has this vision that I think sets him apart. And I could see that your vision about learning is important. I don't want to just breeze past it like it doesn't matter. But I do want to talk about the ad spend. Tell me about that a little bit.
So it was a huge learning lesson for us. We started with $1,000 a month. Then we went to $10,000 a month. And we were very profitable when we were working within those budgets. So for every $10,000, we would make, let's say, $40,000, with $30,000 in profit. As we wanted, so we started saying, oh, if we spend $100,000, economies of scale should work, and we should actually be making $400,000. That's not how paid advertising works. When you have small budgets, you can focus on extremely, extremely specific and relevant keywords. And because those are extremely specific and relevant, they are profitable. But as you are increasing your budget, you have to start bidding for keywords which are more broad. And as you are increasing the scope of those keywords, the ROI is going to reduce. And that is what we started seeing. So a lot of times, and we are also seeing that in so many different areas. When you are 5 people big company and 50 people big company, like, the problems that you are solving are very different. Same with revenue, same with paid advertising. $10,000, making $40,000 does not mean that you can use the same tactics, spend $100,000 and make $400,000.
So it also is hard to track in your space, in the app space, right?
So in the consumer side business or today's business?
Oh, I see. In the consumer side business, you weren't doing ads. I thought this was for the consumer side of the business.
Yeah, so we were doing ads in the consumer side business. We don't do ads anymore.
And so how did you know that it was working? How could you even tie it back in to be able to analyze it that way?
In the consumer side business?
Yeah.
Oh, because we were selling apps. So paid advertising was like you...
But you couldn't tie it back into a specific keyword, could you? You couldn't tie it back to a specific... You can't connect in the app store, unless I'm wrong. You can't connect a source back to an order.
Yeah, so by 2012, when we started doing paid advertising, we also had a web application.
Okay.
So think of it like iTunes. We had a course library on web, iPhone, Android, and you can buy it from any device. And you have access to it on every device.
Okay.
And everything you do will sync across devices.
Okay, I see. So and then, though, if you're talking about web-based, you were competing against people who had been around for a long time, who dialed in their online marketing for a long time. You might have had an advantage in the app space, but when it comes to the web, those people were sharks.
Yes.
And
huge marketing budget. So that was another reason that our ROI, as we were increasing the marketing budgets, was reducing.
It was going down. Okay. Did you guys ever raise any money?
Yes, we raised a seed round and a Series A round. We raised $2.2 million in our seed round from a fund called Lightbank. It is a Chicago-based fund started by Eric Lefkowski and Brett Keywell, founders of Uptake, Tempus, Groupon, InnerWorkings, like a lot of big name companies.
And NEA.
And we raised another round in 2012, $6 million from NEA and Revolution Ventures.
But Revolution is Steve Case's?
Yeah, Steve Case, Ted Leonsis.
Yeah. And NEA is huge with the bigger companies. They're not there to play small ball. They're just, right?
I think they are on their 11th fund. They just raised $3 billion of their 11th fund or something, or 14, something like that. Yeah, they are one of the biggest VC funds in US.
With biggest in terms of dollars, but not in terms of attention. They're not big bloggers. They're not big content creators. They're not big talkers. So I didn't know how, like, what they were all involved with until I moved here to San Francisco and got to know some of the people who were in it. And then I realized, oh, this is huge. How'd you get connected with them?
So NEA is a fund which works very closely with Lightbank. They have invested in a lot of companies started by Eric and Brad. So they made the introduction, and then they loved what we were doing and they invested.
How long did it take you to get Lightbank on as an investor?
Lightbank, actually, from the day we got the first call to the money in the bank, a week.
Because? Why was it so easy for you?
So we were not even looking for funding at that point. We were running it from, like, we were just running it based on the money we were generating. And we won the business plan competition at Chicago Business School. Booth, where Ashish was a student at that time, and Eric heard about us. He gave us a call. He invited us to come present the next day. We came, and then we negotiated for a couple of days, and then the money was in our bank account.
I see.
But the next round was easily 6 months.
Why?
I think when it's like what we have realized is, it's like the saying that companies are bought, they are not sold. It's the same with investment. If you are doing well, investors would knock on your door and they will want to invest. If you actually go out and try to raise, you put yourself in not a very leveraged situation.
And that's where you were. You were at a place where you needed the money.
Yes.
Because at what stage of this, of your story, were you?
So we were early on. We had raised $2.2 million, but we spent a lot of that money in building the next version of the product, including the web app, including the syncing, including these omni-channel deliveries across different platforms. And we did not spend a lot of time in keeping it profitable. So we reached a point that we were growing, but we needed more money to continue growing.
And in the 6 months, so you needed it at that point, in the 6 months while you were having this conversation, how did your bank account do?
I think we had to take a loan for one payroll.
Wow, wow. Was that scary?
Very scary.
When you know what, let me come back and ask you about the scary story. First, I'll do a quick spot here for TopTal. Anyone out there who's looking to hire a developer, I'm actually going to experiment with short ads at times. Anyone out there who's looking for a developer, I want you to go check out toptal.com/Mixergy. They've got the world's best developers in their network, and the URL is super simple. By the way, if you want to hire from them, you could do one person, multiple people, project basis, part-time, full-time, whatever you need. You can often get started within days. Here's with the developer that you hire. All you have to do is go to toptal.com/Mixergy. You're going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. That's top as in top of your head, tal as in talent, toptal.com/Mixergy. When you get scared, what is that like for you? Are you up in the middle of the night? Are you worried that your friends are going to think you failed? You're worried about your dad, your family? What are you thinking?
I think people that I'm responsible to, so employees.
I think I will let this person down. I will let all of them down.
Yeah. And people, like, a lot of times you don't realize the responsibility that comes with having people work for you.
Because they have families, they have kids.
They have insurance. Like, all right. Of that is dependent upon, like, payroll. And if you can't submit that payroll, how are they going to make mortgage, or how are going to they pay for insurance or school or, like, rent, all of those. That was the That's the scariest part of running a business to me.
Right. And you know what? What I don't think about is, you know, if a client doesn't pay me for an extra month, it's a problem. But it's someone's problem. It's going to get handled. It's not an issue. If I don't pay someone who works for me for a week longer than I should because we just didn't hit the button on it, that's it. That's a huge problem, right? It's not, they'll work it out. I see. So you were you up in the middle of the night? Did you need to like have a drink or something to calm yourself down? Multiple drinks? Weed? No.
Definitely drinks.
Watermelon vodka.
I still love that. Yeah, but it was a stressful time. But the good thing is that our investors, like Lightbank, who was our first investor, believed in us. And they sent that loan like within a day.
Oh, I see. They saw, like, this is going to work out. We'll lend you the money. Let's make it work. You don't have to go figure out lending in the process.
No. Thankfully not.
Hey, how come you guys are so successful? And I'm looking over your shoulder. There's nothing there. It's an empty bookcase. I'm trying to get a sense of you. The whiteboard, you wiped the whiteboard down before you got a conversation with me?
Yes, because it had a lot of proprietary information.
I figured. What's going on here?
So, we just moved into this new office. It's a 15,000 square foot space on the 57th floor of Willis Tower. A lot of people know of it as Sears Tower.
Mm-hmm.
It's the tallest, the number one iconic building in Chicago. We have lake view facing like east, west, north, all windows, phenomenal office.
So if you were to turn your screen around, we'd be looking out at a view of all of Chicago. Oh, there, you're doing it right now. Oh, yeah, I see. It's getting cloudy there.
Yeah, it's getting cloudy, but you can see the lake.
Yeah, dude. Wow. So you just moved into this space.
So we moved in a few months ago, and we have bookshelves in all offices, but all of them are empty because that's what we are doing. We are replacing those books with the online learning platform. So no paper waste, be environmental friendly, and actually be useful for the end users.
Do you read your books usually on a Kindle now, or do you still read paper books?
Kindle, iPad, phone. I was never really a book person.
What do you read?
Mostly business books, autobiographies.
Oh, so you're saying you were never a paper book person.
Yeah, I back in the day, I would... Like, I used to make notes on notebook, but I prefer in-person training or like self-studying than like studying from a book.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had this weird experience recently though. One of my guests sent me an actual paper book, and I've been against paper books forever. I'll read on my phone. I tell guests, if you want to send me a book, send it to me via digital. I took out this old pencil that I hadn't used for anything in a long time, just started marking it up. It was a lot of fun, like to say arrow, and then here's a message. It's very tactical, and I could see why people would be drawn to it. It's just not me. I think what you're doing is especially interesting because the more we move, I think the more we could absorb. We're not meant to just sit and have stuff come at us. We need to do something with it. If I were going to teach you to drive, I wouldn't give you a book on how to drive. I would give you a book on how to drive that was small, and I'll put you in a car a lot. And I think you're doing this for test prep, but I wonder where else you could do this. The only place where I see this done really super well is in coding. If you want to learn how to code, they're going to get you into a coding screen fast and have you do and teach along the way. The rest of the world, I don't know how to do that. Do you have any ideas? How would you do that?
So I think we are not just into test prep. So we are building a lot of continuing education programs for our clients. We believe that learning is going to become extremely, extremely important in everyone's professional lives. This entire concept of lifelong learning, where you might have Google Analytics certification 3 years ago, but if you don't continuously follow Google Analytics changes, updates, the certification does not matter anymore.
So do you guys do any Google Analytics training software?
So we are trying to work with Google.
How would you envision it? Because it couldn't just be, here's a question, give me the answer, and I'll tell you what your progress is. Wouldn't you want someone to actually do something in like a demo version of Google Analytics?
Yeah, so the way we have built our platform is that you can embed anything within our platform. So you can have a simulated environment within our platform and say, do this, do that. And
really? I could basically duplicate the Google Analytics screen where I type in a keyword and do a search?
Not without Google. So if we are working with Google, we will integrate with them and can do all of it. So we use our own platform to deliver our own product training for our own product. So when someone is going through a training, they actually end up creating a course on our platform to deliver that training. So like, we are big believers that training in general is going to move online. There are going to be a lot of experts who are going to be there for solving the problems that you are having or answering any questions you have, but learning and practice and like this entire concept of retention has to move online and mobile. And that's what we are focusing on.
You know, so I worked with Dale Carnegie and Associates for a long time. I love that company. I volunteered. One of the trainers started a company that did training for businesses. And I had no idea this was a thing, but businesses need to train their people in their ways. And then, of course, they also have things like sexual harassment training and so on. And I had no idea of how big that business is. So you're saying beyond test prep, we're thinking about that. How do we bring that into the modern age? You're thinking about those types of learning applications that businesses would want to teach their people to everything, not just test prep.
Yeah, so think about all the sales training that goes into a company to teach sales people to do the right thing for the customer. Or even internally, like now, almost every employee in any company ends up using 15 different software. So they use a project management tool, then they use Slack, and then they use like an email tool, a CRM, an ERP, an accounting system, an expense system. How do you bring all of that into like one place where someone is not spending 2 weeks to 4 weeks in just training?
Right. So but everyone uses Slack differently. You would allow the company to create their own Slack training?
So maybe, but what we are doing is we are enabling at least the onboarding on Slack and then the policies of using Slack. If there are very specific things that a company needs, they can, of course, customize the learning program based on their needs.
Wait, so if I have Slack in my team and I want to onboard people, what I do now is I have a checklist for them to go through. You're saying the checklist is not nearly as helpful as this software where I can go to Bench Prep and I could create our onboarding and then give it to each new hire.
Yes. And if it's a three list item checklist, we are not probably going to be the best solution. Whenever you have a complicated training program, which would need Slack training, whatever project management training, maybe your video training, video coaching, like all of that. If you want to combine that into like a training program, then right, our platform will be phenomenal.
What's your pricing on this?
We have a minimum per year of $200,000 a year and 3-year contracts.
I'm looking at, I did a search for pricing and it didn't come up. It wasn't on your site. Instead, it brought me to an article from 2012. I just did pricingbenchprep.com. 2012 TechCrunch article, Bench Prep switches to subscription model as it moves forward. It was you guys trying to figure out your model.
Yes.
This was difficult. I've been brushing over the difficulty of it, but I actually happen to look at my notes here and see that my producer said that at one point you guys had to lay off 80% of your staff just to make the switch. Why?
So in our consumer side business, we had a big marketing team. We had a big content creation or like basically instructional design team, support team, data team. When we switch models, we don't do support. We don't do marketing. We don't create content at all. So a lot of that overhead went away. And also like we were running out of money.
Wow, that must have been really tough. Did you need somebody, like one of your investors, sit you down and say, you've got to move fast, or were you quick with that?
So So I would say the day we had to lay off a big portion of our company back in the day was the darkest day of our entire life, of my life. But Dave, it was one of those things where both Ashish and I worked for a month full time. We are very well connected in this Chicago tech scene. So we made it a point to connect with all the other founders, all the other head of HRs, and all, I would say almost 100%, we found everyone a new home.
Wow. So even while you guys were going through this difficulty, you still said, we need to find these people a new job. It's our responsibility. Wow, it's a lot, man. Do you get to take any time off now?
Not in the last 6 months, and my wife has been complaining about that a lot.
I bet.
But I love traveling. I'm hoping to get a vacation sometime soon.
When you travel, what kind of traveling do you do?
I'm a big snowboarder, so I love like going on the mountains, snowboarding. But I love going on like beach vacation. So we were in Jamaica last year. We were in Japan a couple of years ago.
I've never been there.
Yeah, Dublin, Spain. I love Spain, Italy.
Me too. I'd like to live in Spain for a year and do Mixergy from there. It's just the kind of place where I feel comfortable. That's the kind of traveling I like to do. I like to live in the country for a little bit to experience what getting breakfast is like. When they eat dinner, when you go to a country and they eat dinner at 10 o'clock, it changes your world for a little bit.
Absolutely. I've been to Spain, I think, 4 times. I love Barcelona. That's like my favorite city in the world outside of Chicago.
The only problem I have with Barcelona is they're going to take my iPhone X. iPhone 10, excuse me, right? It's a pretty dangerous country. All right, congratulations on doing this. Look, I'm very proud to have you on here. I'm really glad that you're here. I'm wondering what's in it for you. Why are you doing this interview? Why are you out there? Like, to be honest, we got you through your PR company. Why do you have a PR company to help you get the word out to companies like mine on sites like mine?
I think our biggest problem that we are trying to solve from purely marketing side is a lot of prospective clients might have heard of BenchPrep, but they still think that we are a consumer side company. So that, like, even you, or like we talk to a lot of people, they still think that we are a consumer side company when we are not at this point. So that makes it on us to like continuously repeat that message that we are enterprise as learner success platform. And second, we believe in the mission we have. And I've been a big follower of Mixergy for 7 years now. Like since you started, I used to remember that you used to post it on Hacker News.
Yeah.
And I would watch like all those videos. So being on Mixergy is like phenomenal.
Well, thank you. Thanks.
And finally being able to talk to you.
Thanks a lot. And I hope I get to talk to you in person. I'm amazed and excited about your story. I'm also shocked as I did some research that there weren't that many articles about you. Hopefully this will start off a series of more. I mean, about the company there were, about you. I like your story, your message. I know that you do some of this stuff on Techstars. I kind of had to sense maybe you guys raised money from them and that's why you're just mentoring the Techstars. I feel like this is a story that needs to be told. I'm glad that you're on here telling it. And I'm also, frankly, selfishly, I'm glad that you didn't tell it in all these other places first. All right. For anyone who wants to connect with you, I think the best way to do it is to just go check out your site, benchprep.com. And my two sponsors, the company that's going to help anyone host their website, right? It's called hostgator.com/Mixergy. And the company that will help you hire your next great developer is called toptal.com/Mixergy. All right. Thanks so much and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrew.
Cool. Thanks. Bye, everyone.